You like karaoke?
Yeah.
It's good, you know? Something to do at night. There's nothing to do at night. What can you do at night? Bowling, movies. It's like a third thing to do after bowling and the movies. I don't know if you bowl or not. I don't go that often. But it's fun. It's fun. You can't find a ball. That's the problem. I don't know. Maybe you own a bowling ball. I don't own a bowling ball. My whole life, every time I'm in a bowling alley, sticking my fingers in all these holes, picking up the balls. You got to get your own ball.
TBTL.
I would like to be president someday, so no, I've not smoked marijuana. I ate a brownie once at a party in college. It was intense. It's kind of indescribable, actually. I felt like I was floating. Turns out there wasn't any pot in the brownie. It was just an insanely good brownie.
Well, with all due respect, I mean, I hate to admit this, but I mean, I don't think I've been online in, you know, a couple days or weeks or whatever. So, I mean, that's really not an important thing to me. My face, your face, instant face. Go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff. I don't know.
You know, I am so tired of going on dates where I have to listen to guys go on and on about how they're turning their Twitter feeds into blogs, their blogs into books, and their books into Twitter feeds. It's exhausting. Stop pretending that your podcast is work, right?
Rudy, wake up. It's time to go to work. On a Wednesday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Shame on everybody involved.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
An innocent champion of honesty.
That's what I'm known as around these parts. The Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched up Alabama Hill. In Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, Pod Dog.
I'll say, what's up, Doke?
It's totally crashed out. She's had a long day of going outside in the rain, realizing it's raining, and then immediately coming back inside the house because she does not like being out there when it's wet. On the other hand,
there is something about the soul of a cat.
The Bay Kitty loves nothing more than just to get absolutely soaking wet, which is very off-brand for a cat based on the popular mythology around them. But then she has a kind of a cool move she does. She goes outside, she gets completely and totally drenched, and then she comes in and then she just plops herself down on the couch or the bed or whatever surface is the least great place for her to dry out. So that's kind of her power move. Here's an exciting piece of news. It's episode 2596 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
And we are going to talk about the legacy of Stephen Hawking, who has passed away at age 76. A legacy that involves so many amazing things, not the least of which was a memorable appearance on The Simpsons.
Sometimes the smartest of us can be the most childish.
Even you?
No, not me.
We will remember a bunch of the different cool, amazing, surprising things about Stephen Hawking and his life and his career. We're also going to get you an update on the Powerball winner from New Hampshire, who was suing for the right to keep her name anonymous. The judge has ruled in the matter, and we'll tell you what they've said. And if there is time, which there probably won't be, let's be honest, when's the last time we got to a third top story? Never get to a third top story on a podcast. That's one of the rules I learned in the Podcasting Academy. If we do, though, we'll talk about Farhad Manjoo, the tech writer for the New York Times, and semi-frequent radio guest on shows that I've worked on. He said he was going to quit social media, and then he wrote about it, but then he was still out on Twitter tweetering. So maybe he wasn't quitting social media. We'll look into that as well, time permitting, plus emails and V-mails. And the delightful company of this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the program. He bought a perch sandwich, but it doesn't mean he thinks he's better than anyone else. He's the Hodor of podcasting. Here he is, having the time of his life.
Kicking him off, the soulful rocker from New Hampshire.
He is the soulful rocker from New Hampshire. He's Andrew Walsh, and he joins us now from the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, for now.
Am I Hello, being fired again? I can't take it. I can't take the tone.
Hi, Luke. Write yourself a note. Here, will you do this? Will you get like a post-it note or just something kind of sticky or something that can be taped? And just write a note to yourself that says, when Luke says, for now, he's referencing the fact that your time in the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Your time is now short. You'll soon be joining us from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, because you guys, if I understand right, have made it official that you guys are moving to some new digs.
Papers have been signed. Checks have been written. Checks are getting ready to bounce. It's all happening, my friend. Yeah, very, very excited. And it's a very, very short timeline for a move for us. You know, kind of relatively speaking, we found out what I think we found out maybe a week ago that our rent was going up. We found a place almost immediately. And now here we are. We're going to be out of here by the end of the month here. And I am excited. I got to say, you know, I'm getting notes from people just like, oh, moving, there's nothing good about it. Like, good luck. I mean, and people are treating me like I'm going off to war. But man, this is the easiest move. I'm not saying it's not going to be difficult to some degree. And I'm definitely privileged because I think we are going to hire somebody to help us with just like big stuff, just the furniture. But everything else, like every other move we've done in the past three moves have been major, like either cross-country moves or certainly to a different state moves where we have to figure out a cat situation, whether the getting cats on airplanes or finding hotels that'll accept cats as we are driving
from
California.
Somebody better get these mother bleeping cats off this mother bleeping plane.
No, that almost, they almost did get my mother bleeping cats off the mother bleeping plane like 10 years ago. But like this feels
so great.
Well,
that's good because that's the last time that joke was relevant that I just made.
But this feels great to me. Like we can spend our evenings here packing up boxes. We're already doing that. And then, you know, I'm going to get the keys to the apartment a few days early. So during that last week of March, I'll finish up TBTL and then I'll just start, you know, loading my car full of boxes, going over there, dropping them off, going back and forth. I'm not saying it's like great work, but just like, again, like, I don't know, man. There were so many logistics involved that Genevieve always took care of, by the way, in the past. I mean, in her to her credit, with the exception of New Hampshire to Seattle, I had to take care of like a lot of the crazy cat situation stuff. But this just, Genevieve is, I think, automatically, because the moves have been so stressful the past few times, I think that she, not to tell her how she should feel, but I feel like her anxiety level is higher than it needs to be because it's almost like a reaction. Like it's moving time and she feels overwhelmed. So like yesterday, just for like kind of peace of mind, I just took care of cable switching, electric, gas, like all of that kind of stuff. Like I called all those companies, got it all locked down. Like I was like, Vives, just don't think about that anymore. That stuff is done. Like, and the rest of this, relatively speaking, we are very well equipped to handle this move. And we're so excited about the new place. So I'm feeling
that
really
is a
good about
major,
it.
Major, major kind of, I don't know, pressure reliever when you can just kind of like throw stuff in your car and then just head over there, you know, intermittently. You can just do it like little bit by bit, as my friend, and now your friend, the sky pilot, Sky Seeger of Minnesota, once said, how do you eat an elephant? This is as we were staring at a huge bottle of vodka. So it wasn't a great decision on either of our parts, but it was how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time. And we finished that bottle of vodka, Andrew, and didn't go to work the next day. And you're going to finish this move one bite at a time. The story got weird. I apologize.
Yeah.
But you'll be, just to be able to take stuff over, you know, a few trips a day and then the big stuff, knock that out. Like that just makes it so much easier. So I'm glad. I'm mostly glad because it doesn't sound like you're going to ask me to help you move, which I've already thought this through. I actually had this conversation with myself. If Walsh asks me to help him move, will you say yes, Burbank? In the words of Sarah Palin, will you serve? And the answer is a strong affirmative. Yes, absolutely. I would. And you are on a very short list of people who I would help move, my friend.
Thanks.
But I would.
I really appreciate that. But yeah, I think we're going to, I feel bad saying this. I know other people who have to move, they, you know, don't have the extra money to go ahead and
don't worry about your mover's privilege.
Mover's privilege. But but even this time, like in the past, I know I've already said this, but when you're moving from states, like you have to get actual moving companies to come. They tag everything in your house. You've already packed it all up. In some cases, they pack it for you. I don't prefer that. I would prefer to pack my own stuff. And then you have to like, then you move and then you have to be somewhere for a couple of weeks before your stuff arrives. You always kind of make a reference to the riddles where you're holding a sack of flour and a chicken And I always say there's a scorpion on your back because I think it's funny to confuse those things. Anyway, it always feels like that. Like, well, how are we going to get there? Well, then where's the internet and how are we going to do our shows and all of that stuff? And this just seems incredibly manageable. And because we're so excited about the new place and the new neighborhood, we went there the other day to drop off the check and stuff. I guess this was yesterday. And it's just so great to be in a new neighborhood where you're looking around and be like, I can't wait to try that place. I can't wait to go, you know, some of our favorite places like this restaurant Bowl is already there. Our candle making shop, I think I told you, is almost directly across the street.
So Teddy's
the bar, which your dad apparently, I'm getting words from people that the neighborhood bar there is called Teddy's and it's amazing.
Yes.
And then you told me that your dad painted the super cute sign of Teddy Roosevelt.
Walt Burbank, who's not really, he's not a caricaturist by any means. In fact, most of the signs that he does and has done are like, you know, CPAC Realty, retail space available, nothing too cute. But for some reason, he got this gig many, many years ago. I mean, like back when our whole family lived in Seattle, of doing the Teddy's sign. And then when that sign wore out, they hired him to do another sign. So it's like, it's basically his kind of most fun, accessible, interesting sign work. And it's now going to hang outside of a bar where I would imagine you'll while away more than a few hours because it's a cool place.
Yeah, I hear great things about it. And I think the sign is super cute, by the way. I have a smallish picture of it that I'm going to post as the show pic today. But yeah, so anyway, just in a really, for somebody who's about to move, usually it's like, oh God, we're going to get through this. But I'm feeling real good and real excited. Oh, and internet's going to be almost twice as fast as it is here.
What?
Listeners don't care about that, but you and I often struggle with getting this line connected. And if there's any kind of glitch in the matrix, even a small slowdown, we're kind of, what did I used to think? Shit on a log. It's actually shit out of luck, but I used to think my dad was saying shit on a log, which I never understood.
well, that would be a pretty bad situation.
That would be bad too, yeah.
I the battery's dead in my car and I can't get a hold of anyone because I'm going to shit on this log.
There were so many befouled logs in my backyard until I finally figured out what they were actually saying.
Yeah, that's great, man. I'm excited. I'm excited you're going to have fast internet. I feel like that means I can probably crank my speeds back down to the 1990s.
Nope.
Just some kind of, an old router, the modem, the kind that goes, because then you're going to be fast enough for both of us, right?
That's not how it works, but I love that imitation. Can you now give me a dot matrix?
Actually, the dot matrix, they're both terrible, but the dot matrix was
better.
It was going to get really close. No, it was going to be close to a like a ship to shore, kind of like an SOS type of situation. This is why we don't do impressions on this show, because they end up sounding, even if they're just of machinery. That's great, man. I'm excited for you. I'm excited to come hang out with you. I'm excited to lounge around on your rooftop deck area with all of your plants, and it's going to be a fun time. Speaking of fun times, we are going to have a fun time coming up next Wednesday. So that will be Wednesday the, what are we talking, Andrew? The 20th.
Let me get my calendar in front of me. Why did I think it was the 19th? The 21st.
I'm thinking it's the 21st.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm thinking we're looking at Wednesday, March 21st. We are going to do Hey Dummies live.
I'll write it and we'll do it live
on Facebook. Now that's about the extent of my awareness of this, Andrew. What exactly are we going to be doing live on the internet?
So we do this, for those who don't know, if you're a new listener, we do a weekly email that we send out every Friday. And part of that email is a video where Luke and I will answer any questions you want to ask us about our personal lives or about our personal lives. And you can submit those to us usually by just emailing me a Hey Dummies question. But I did a little test. You know, you can do Facebook Live videos where you can just sit in front of your camera or your computer or your phone and stream directly live to a Facebook group. And since we have that very active Stens page where we have a bunch of listeners who are checking in and posting things, I did a little test and we can stream a live video directly to that page. So when you're over here on Wednesday, I guess the time is a little TBD, but we're thinking probably, I don't know, what, maybe two-ish-ish West Coast time. Does that sound doable to you? Wednesday, the 21st. You and I will just fire up that thing.
8:30 for 9?
Yes. Yeah. Just after breakfast. We'll just sit there, and instead of answering one question like we usually do, you guys can just fire questions at us live right there in that forum, and we'll answer them like an Ask Me Anything with video.
How are we doing on Hey Dummies questions overall? Because I'm due to record one this week, and you were sending me the list. Are we backed up on them? Are we running low? Should we use this as an opportunity to solicit more Hey Dummies questions?
I feel like we can always use more. We do have a long list of ones that we can get to, but I also like them when they're kind of fresh and new too. So if you have any, just think like anything that you want to know, like, you know, a lot of the questions are about how we maintain a level of style and sophistication that a lot of people can't. Yes. It's a lot of lifestyle questions, advice, how to apply makeup and foundation. I get a lot of those questions.
I consider us really at this point kind of a lifestyle brand.
Me too.
I don't know if you're familiar with influencers like Gwyneth Paltrow and Kylie Jenner, but we're sort of in that camp. By the way, I don't know if I can find the email on the fly, but during one of our ads for fine sponsor Everlane, I mentioned that we are fashion icons, and then a listener jumped on the line to email me and let me know that I was saying the T-shirt that I was wearing from Everlane. Apparently, I was actually saying it wrong. So that's an indication that I'm not yet a fashion icon.
What is the T-shirt, and what did you say? What's the correction? I'm interested. Do you even know?
I said I there's a T-shirt that I really like from that place, and I was calling it a peak T because it's spelled P-I-Q-U-E. I thought it was like peak your interest.
Yeah.
But listener Ann said when it's fabric, it's PK.
Interesting.
I learned this from a native Texan, so I hear it with a drawl, and it really stuck. PK. So I guess it's and then there's a link to the Oxford Dictionary because Ann just really had to friggin' rub it in. So anyway, my fashion icon status is currently under review because I don't know how PK T-shirt is pronounced. But regardless, we are really trying to build the TBTL lifestyle brand, and we do that, I think, largely through Hey Dummies. So please do send in your questions. And mostly, I mean, I'll be honest, and I feel like you haven't leaned on this nearly as heavily as I have. But pretty much every Hey Dummies video I do is just an excuse to show Rudy and or Olive. And I know that it's low-hanging fruit, and I know that it's getting old, but it makes me happy. And isn't that what this is all about?
Yes, it is. And I show the cats when possible. I think it's smart. I mean, it's not like you're forcing it on people. Like, people love seeing. Do you think there's anybody out there who would rather look at our faces than our pets' faces?
Yeah, there's somebody who, I mean, as we've been noting lately, you go on that Facebook page, there's somebody who doesn't like us talking or showing the pets.
Yeah, maybe.
Just because you get enough people in a room together, even virtually, somebody's going to not like it.
Although, I got to say, I've never seen that. I of all of the complaints that I've just focused on and just that have ruined my days and weeks over the past years. No, I've never seen any. I just don't. Who's the person who complains about too much pets? Too many pets
just saying,
in a video.
There's a first time for everything. And there's a first time for us. Taking the break relatively on time.
That's
and it's
smooth.
Not going to be today because we're a few minutes over.
Okay.
But we do need to take a quick break. And then when we come right back, we're going to talk about Stephen Hawking. We're going to talk about Powerball in New Hampshire and a bunch of other stuff. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It meets the road that goes to my house, and how the green grows there. And we got special boots that beat the path to my house, and it's careful, and it's careful when I'm there. And I say your uncle was a crooked French Canadian, and he was gut shot running gin.
I like this. Is this Neutral Goat Hotel?
It is Decemberists. The Decemberists.
Sounds like Neutral Milk Hotel and the Mountain Goats got together and made a band called the Decemberists.
That's a pretty solid observation. I will give that to you. I'm sorry, I'm
you
a little distracted.
Surprised.
No, I'm just bummed. I haven't heard the. First of all, this used to be one of my favorite songs. But I just
I like it. By the way, I've not heard it, but I was enjoying it.
It's called July, July, and I'm just a little bit mad at myself for not saving that for July. Like it's March.
Well,
I feel like that was.
We can play it again.
I guess.
We've
not the same.
Already driven away a sufficient number of listeners that it'll be new to them come July. If
that's
we play
true.
It early enough in the program. I think, you know what, the Decemberist, every time I hear a Decemberist song, I really enjoy it. And I like a lot of bands that are in that same, you might say, oeuvre.
Mm-hmm.
But the Decemberists themselves, I've never done a proper kind of investigation of. I do know that the guy who's a... the sort of head of the operation, Colin Malloy, I believe is his name.
Good recall.
He lives in Portland.
Never, really?
And we can't get him to be on Livewire. And I feel like somebody in Portland must know this dude. Get that guy on Livewire, will you?
Get that guy on my show. Come on.
Come on. What are we doing here? Like, we're just sitting around listening to this podcast, not working as unpaid producers for the radio show that is not this podcast. What is happening in this world? No, but it's like it's one of those. I get a little frustrated sometimes because there are people in Portland in particular. I know that's a lot of peas, dude, who are just like they'd be great on the show. I know they'd like being on the show, but for whatever reason, can't get organized. The wrong people are talking to other wrong people. And it's just like, come on. Let's just end this moonlighting, will they, won't they, bullshit, and get Colin Malloy on. He wrote a kid's book. He and his wife wrote a kid's book. I was like, come on. Who doesn't need to promote their kid's book? Those things ain't flying off the shelf unless they're the Very Hungry Caterpillar. Very overrated, by the way. Should be called the Very Overrated Hungry Caterpillar. Sorry, Eric Carl.
How many and I'm just going to go with the... tag alternative.
How many cocaines did I have before the show?
How many cocaines
did apparently
you have?
Too many.
I feel like so many musicians who are like kind of indie musicians end up getting a little bit older and writing either a children's book or a children's album. This little observation is not going to help your attempt to get Colin Malloy on your show because I'm essentially implying that he's a hack. I don't mean to, but it just seems like a very common theme.
I think it's a combination of things that happen. One, I think that a lot of these musicians are writing about their lives, and when they're writing music about, semi-charmed kind of life, just to use the example of Third Eye Blind, one of your top five bands, mm-hmm. I believe, Andrew.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of times it's, you write about your life, and then when you have kids, that becomes a bigger part of your life, and it's maybe what's on your mind. And also, you're right. It's kind of, I feel like it's, for a while anyway, probably not any longer, it was low-hanging fruit. It was like, oh, you are a kind of moderately successful indie band person, but now you're in your 30s and you're not like selling out the Showbox anymore, but you want to keep making music and you realize that like you can make a kid's record and you might sell some, all the people who liked you in the 90s when you were popular with your indie band, they've all got kids now too, and they'd like to keep liking you along with their children. And you're right, that's a cynical take on it, but I do think that is a component of it.
I remember the big one for me was when Lisa Loeb was on her tour for her first kids album. And I think that probably a lot of radio producers and hosts kind of come up against this when one of these famous people write a children's album or a children's book. It's like, oh, great, we can get some big name on our show. Not that Just for the record, not that Lisa Loeb is the biggest name in music. But, sometimes you can get a really big name
She's
on your show.
She's the only name in music as far as I'm concerned.
Lisa, you go to her website, lisaloeb.biz, and it says Lisa Loeb, mm-hmm. the first and last name in music. But they come mm-hmm. on the show, and then you're like, well, we got this person on our show, but I guess, how much of the children's shit do we got to talk about before we just get into how good the song
right.
Stay is, which it is
yeah,
a big
exactly.
song.
It's a club banger. Are you kidding me? Did she just adapt Stay
love it.
To be like a kid song? Was that the album?
Yeah, I think so. Here, I'll sing along with the revised lyrics. And you say...
I never nap when I want to. By the way, I meant to tell you, you're 1 second off because of the
delay. Oh, shoot. Well, it sounds on my end.
How's
because
that treating you?
I'm the one who's recording it, though, so it sounds fine on my end. I was going to go with I can only play blocks when I want to. So we were on a very similar.
Better joke. Way better spoof, by the way.
No.
Extreme. Because, listen, think about the logic of my line. You say, I never nap when I want to. Well, if I want to nap, I'm napping. Mm. Yours is a much more logical thing. I guess the question is, the difference is your version of the song is being sung from the perspective of the kid. And mine also was. Mine was just even less. Mine worked even less well.
I think the explanation of our parodies did work. So that's what's important.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the key to a good parody. You need to explain it. Let's just go ahead and use this music to talk about our donors of the day. Why not?
You stayed around for the TBTL-a-thon instead of turning off the podcast when we're asking for your donations.
Oh, man, I'm trying to do that fast part. Hover from the others, from the dying since the day we were born part. I was trying to, first of all, remember how that part goes. Second of all, turn it into a thing about donating to TBTL.
Wow.
And, didn't get there. But tell you who got there when we did the most recent TBTL. Ignatius Henschel of Seattle, Washington. I believe that would be Nate Henschel as well. It'd be cool to have the name Ignatius because, like, when you wanted to be a Supreme Court judge, you could be Ignatius. And when you wanted to just be, like, a guy hanging out watching the game, you could be Nate. Mm-hmm. You could be basically a Nate in the streets and an Ignatius
in the
halls of the Supreme Court.
Yes, right.
How about a Nate with your bros and Ignatius with your robes?
Doesn't really officially
rhyme. It's just cool. I mean, that's just that name is. Mm-hmm. It goes from being so casual to being so incredibly important sounding and kind of august.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool work by Ignatius's parents, and cool work by Ignatius for donating to the show. Also, Amanda Hurst of Bellevue, Washington. Thank you, Amanda, for supporting TBTL. Douglas Hanau of Brooklyn, New York.
Hanau.
In Brooklyn, Douglas. Hanau. I didn't even see you out there, Douglas. I hope you're doing well, man. I hope you're surviving the just ridiculous number of storms moving through. They got another blizzard moving through, or maybe has moved through even right now. It's terrible. Stay warm. Stay warm all summer. Rebecca Gerke of Kingston, Washington. Wait a minute. I was driving through. I feel like I'm passing these listeners like ships in the night, Andrew. I headed basically through Kingston. Sorry, I think we got whatever. What do you think? Let's just play a game called What is the next song that will auto-load after Lisa Loeb's Stay instrumental version?
And it was the instrumental version?
Okay, I know what it is.
Okay.
So, it is the instrumental version of a popular song. What it would be if YouTube algorithmically was like, I see you like Lisa Loeb, Stay.
Mm-hmm.
Try this.
Yeah, I'm going to say, who's the... I know what song I'm thinking of, Luke.
I bet you're right. I have a weird feeling that you're right.
Because there are two videos.
Not a feeling I have a lot.
Is it not Paula Cole, although that would be kind of in that realm, too. But there's
Paula Colder.
There's another video where there's just like the Stay video. There's a young woman who is singing and wandering around her apartment. In the video that I'm talking about, and everybody, I think a lot of our listeners, especially listeners our age, know Natalie Imbruglia.
Oh,
that's
man,
what I'm thinking of.
That song is torn, and it's a
torn.
Good,
yes,
that's an extremely good pull. It is not the song that we're looking for, but it's. I mean, that makes a lot of sense as a guess. This is just imagine. That you were like a kid growing up like I did where you were like not really supposed to listen to non-Christian music, but you sometimes did. But like there was a certain kind of world of non-Christian music or at least music that was played on the radio because to be honest with you, this band I believe does have this is going to give some of it away. This band has a mildly Christian backstory, I believe.
Jars of Clay.
But there was also those kind of – no. Ooh, also a good poll. This has a female lead singer, a mildly Christian background.
It's not even
and
Grant.
It's the kind of song that like somebody would have played, somebody would have maybe played at like a worship, like not in church at worship, but like a youth group. It's kind of a bit of a crossover. Actually, that's, you know, I take that last part out. It wouldn't be, it would be very weird if you played this really? In a church setting, because it is a song about romance and about the physical moment of romance.
But it's a
little bit.
Band, and so it's not, I'm trying to think of, because you know I like music from this era, especially music by women singers, but usually they're kind of solo acts, but this is a band.
This might have come a little after
Till
your
Tuesday?
Time.
No, okay.
No. Way, way after Till Tuesday. Okay. I'm just going to start sneaking it in.
Oh, God, Kiss Me. What was the name of this band? I love this song so much. Oh, damn.
Oh, you did love this song so much.
Oh, I love this song. Are you shitting me?
I thought
shit on
maybe
a
by
log
the time this came around
and play this song. Sorry, I'll stop saying that.
Oh God, the imagery of you in the backyard just playing this song and shitting on logs.
Don't speak.
See, I would have thought maybe by the time Sixpence None the Richer rolled around with this, you would have kind of been moving into like Andrew, like I'm trying. Pavement territory, or just kind of cooler, like quote unquote cooler music.
Well, I think this is very cool. I agree.
But I'm sort of basic. I'm pretty right down Main Street with my musical taste.
I just love all music, Luke. Can I tell you that me and our friend Rachel Bell are both obsessed with this kind of era and type of music, and so we made a mixtape together. Oh my God, we made this back in 2012. Can't believe it was that long ago. I'm looking at it now. It's called Music is for Girls. Can I tell you the lineup on this?
Yeah.
You're going to like this. We got. Do you want me to kind of sample a little bit as we go? I know we're in the middle of thanking
the
donors.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll turn down Sixpence, 6P, and the R. I don't know what the fans called themselves. Pence heads?
I'll try not to belabor this too much, but here's a little bit of this. Belly, brand new album out. I think I'm going to be seeing Belly probably with Rachel
Bell.
Is
this Feed the Tree, though?
Feed the Tree.
So good. Club banger.
Oh, so good. What else do we have here? Oh, this. I'm belaboring it. I wasn't going to do this.
No.
You recognize it?
Is this the Donnas?
It is a Seether. Here it goes.
Oh, I don't know Seether.
Veruca Salt. You'll know when you...
Oh,
None of that's ringing a bell?
Oh, I recognize the chorus, yeah. I always, like, saw the name Veruca Salt being bandied about the Glass Onion when I worked at the... University of Washington Daily as the swimming reporter, but across the newsroom was the Glass Onion, which was the cool, like, arts insert to the newspaper, helmed by one Sean Nelson, later of the band Harvey Danger, now of the newspaper The Stranger. But anyway, I'd see their name, but I couldn't have named a Veruca Salt song, but yeah, I recognize that chorus. Okay, keep it coming, man. I'm digging this. I don't know if the listener... Let me actually, though, let me just say... Rebecca, Douglas, Amanda, and Ignatius, known in some parts as Nate, thank you for supporting TBTL, and you're welcome that your Donor of the Day shout-out turned into this. Keep it rolling.
Recognize it yet?
No, this one, I'm drawing a total blank.
Okay.
Who's this?
Come in. Here. Might be a while for the chorus to kick in, but it's called Here and Now by Letters to Cleo. I'm pretty sure you would know that. No?
I don't think I've heard of that band.
These were all, okay, but these were just for the record. None of these are like kind of deep cuts. These are all radio hits. Here's another one, which this one, by the way, directly, I mean, I don't know if they got in trouble or if it was just a bunch of kind of music nerd friends who were mad that this band really kind of ripped off or borrowed a Wire song for this. Come on, get there, buddy.
Oh, sure. see, Girl Talk samples this.
Oh.
So I can't get the rapping out of my head that's currently happening over this if I'm listening to Girl Talk, but yeah.
Have you ever heard the Wire song, by the way? Now I need to Google on here, and that's never good. So there's a band called Wire.
Wait, can you play it?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Okay, but go back to... Are you able to go back to that song?
Yep. Yep.
Because I mean, who actually is this song by? I've heard it a million times, and I couldn't tell you who the artist is.
It's Elastica?
Elastica. God. I used to live near Elastica. I could see Russia from my house. This is one of those songs that I've heard many, many times, but would have never been able to tell you who the artist was behind it.
So I apologize for trying to do this on the fly, but a very quick Google tells me that the song I'm trying to think of that people said this sounds a lot like is a song called Three Girl Rumba. Is that how you say it? R-H-U-M-B? Rumba? Rumba. Rumba's a vacuum.
Rumba.
Rumba.
Yeah.
It's the dance, right? Or is it a dance or is it a rhythm?
Yeah, the rumba.
The rumba.
Or,
it's the most dangerous.
I mean, or a rhythm. One of the two.
It's the safest dance. Okay, let's play this. This is
Well,
Wire.
Be careful. The rhythm is going to get you.
So you can see some similarities there in the guitar.
Hold on a second.
But I mean,
it's very, you know, it's very Vanilla Ice, right? It's like, because it's going dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun, dun. It's staying constant, whereas the Elastica one goes dun, 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 dun. Like at the end, it sort of goes up and then down, where, you know, the famously Vanilla Ice changed like one note off of the bass line of Under Pressure, so it wasn't stealing the song, I guess. Although I don't think that would hold up these days, BT dubs. In the current climate we live in.
Well, actually, according to Wikipedia, well, actually, Luke, the song was subject.
You're going to mansplain this to me, huh?
I'm going to wiki-splain this to you. it was a subject of controversy due to its overt similarity to another band's work. The intro synthesizer part, and later repeated as a guitar figure, is lifted from the guitar riff in Wire's Three Girl Rumba, aka The Safest Dance, and transposed down a semitone. The judgment resulted in an out-of-court settlement, and the credits were rewritten. So this is another example, even back whenever this happened in the 90s, that they had to like credit Wire, apparently, in the official credits of the song now.
You know, I try to listen to Wire. Everybody tells me it's like the best band that's ever existed. I think some of the seasons were okay. A lot of it, though, I just think it's a little bit overrated.
Honestly,
it's on my list. I need to go back. I need to rewatch it. But I don't even want to tell people at parties that I don't love Wire as much as they do, because it's just like I don't want to get that look.
I mean, I don't want the album about the docks. I did not. I mean, I'll be straightforward. I thought the album about the docks was pretty weak.
Kind of a miss. Kind of a miss with Ziggy. Okay, keep it going, man. This person a couple months ago. Who is this?
Juliana Hatfield? Did you?
No. Sorry. Sounds a lot like, and now look who can't remember things. I did this LiveWire episode where we interviewed a bunch of singers, Patty Griffin. It sounded a little Patty Griffin to me. Now did Juliana Hatfield, but wasn't there like a Juliana Hatfield 3?
That's what this is.
Didn't
yeah.
She?
Yeah.
Oh, Juliana okay. Hatfield, oh, I see. Right. Hatfield heads. Hat heads just call it Juliana Hatfield. I see.
And it's appropriate because that's where you wear your hat. The song is called Spin the Bottle. Does it ring a bell to you?
Yes, it does. When you get into the chorus, or bring the chorus book. Oh, yeah, that part. Yeah. Definitely.
All right, the next one.
Anything else?
I mean, I have quite a few here. I'll try to go a little bit quicker. I don't want to rush it, but you know this
Listen,
one.
Listen, man,
right?
I honestly, I'm happy to push out the entire plan for today just to listen to 90s music that you and Rachel Bell assembled on a mixtape.
Let's keep going then. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this one because I think you'll recognize it immediately.
I like to add R's to things now.
Mm-hmm. That new thing you're trying?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I gotta say, like, I like this song, but I think I've heard it enough via karaoke that it's almost like, I don't know if I ever need to listen to it again.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that happening. And I hear it especially
a lot. Peace and love to Linda Perry.
During karaoke, because that's I like my favorite song, so people will often try to play that and try to get me to sing along with them, but I don't like to sing into microphones.
Oh yeah,
this will take you back.
Cannonball.
I can almost smell
Cannonball
my CD
come in.
Of this.
Did you say you can smell your CD?
Yes, I can.
Ooh.
It's better than the logs out back.
Yeah, anything is.
Cannonball coming.
I didn't even know. When you said that, I didn't know what you were talking about. That must be from the golfing movie, right?
That's some Carl Spackler.
Yeah. All right. We're going a little bit more chill here. You love her, right?
Oh, man. I saw these guys last time they came. Well, not that long ago when they came through town. They played the Neptune. And, oh, man. Such a fun night. Mazzy Star. I'll get down with a Mazzy Star Pandora station.
Yeah,
that's not a shame to say.
Especially at a certain time of night. You remember Hope Sandoval had a new song that we played maybe last summer for Music for Your Weekend, and I meant to go back and check out that whole album because we loved the song. Do you recall that, and did you ever go back and check out more?
I remember playing the song. I don't remember going back and checking out more.
I think it had your favorite. Who's your favorite guy guitarist fella who might have been once?
Eddie Van Halen.
No. The guy who would lay on the ground and kick his feet and go in circles.
Oh, Wolfgang Van Halen.
Right. All right, let's leave it there. Mother,
how's the family? See, this right here could be in trouble for almost. I mean, it's only like two notes, but that starts off. Majorly George Michael Faith.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, you remember this?
Let me hear the chorus. Okay. It's sounding familiar.
It's real aggro. See how much time I saved by not saying aggressive?
What am I going to do with the rest of my afternoon now? You saved so much time. It's almost too much time. Life is perfect. Never better. Distance making the heart grow blind.
This is a good mixtape.
I like this.
It's Tracy Bonham.
Power chords.
Tracy Bonham, Mother Mother is the name of that song.
I like that song. I've heard that before, but again, not unlike Elastica. Couldn't have told you who did it.
We're getting close here. Got Liz Phair doing Supernova. That was on the radio, but probably not quite as big of a hit as a lot of these other ones, right?
What happened with me and Liz Phair, and she'll remember it till the day she dies, was everybody talked about Liz Phair. Liz Phair was the sort of female singer-songwriter of kind of our generation, if you will. I mean, everybody loved Liz Phair. I had somehow never heard Liz Phair's music. First time I saw her live, and I got to be honest, I was way underwhelmed because I had built up these big expectations. I thought it was fine, but I was on this like Mary Lou Lord train, which was very few people. It was about me. It was me and Mary Lou Lord. And for a while, my little sister Liz, who I forced to go to a Mary Lou Lord show at the Hub at the UW, the Student Union Building. We saw her in the basement with about 30 other people. But anyway, I know people love Liz Phair. I mean, what's it? Exit Guyville or something? That was like
Exile. Exile in Guyville.
Exile. Okay. Is that an Exile on Main Street reference, maybe?
I think so. No, I've never proven this or read enough about it, but it was supposed to be, yeah, like it was supposed to be a response to the Stones record or a Stones record, which I assume would be.
And by the way, peace and love to, I'm sure many of our listeners being kind of our age are like Liz Phair is everything to them. And I'm not saying Liz Phair shouldn't be everything to them. I'm just saying that for me, it was like a movie that you've just been hearing rapturous reviews of, and that's almost always a recipe for disaster when you finally see it.
And Liz Phair, I don't know much about Liz Phair. Huge blind spot for me, considering how much I love all this kind of music, until I met Genevieve, and Genevieve was a big Liz Phair fan, so I remember going on road trips with her, and we would listen to Exile and a couple of other ones. Big White Egg. Something about an egg. I'm driving people crazy who are in the know. Yeah. And so I'm glad that Genevieve introduced me to Liz Phair. But yeah, I can't claim being a huge Phair head from that time. Let's go on to this.
She's always been sort of more of a blonde spot for me. That's the color her hair is.
Well, am I fooling you? Do you fall for it all? Or do you just see right through?
Here's a hint. It's the only artist who has an exclamation point after her name or the band's
name. Is it Chikung?
It's Frente. Frente. Oh, Labor of Love.
Wait, what? Frente?
F-R-E-N-T-E.
Was this a Rachel Bell suggestion?
Yeah, but let's listen a little bit more. You'll remember it.
I don't know how I've been, what you said, to what I believe. Don't know anything at all.
Come on.
I'm staying in the push and shove, and I'm just within the rescue of a labor of your love. I can't do anything but fall.
Nothing? No, not ringing any little bells for you?
No, it sounds a little bit familiar to me.
Okay.
I very much was liking it. You know, I had that reaction because I was thinking of Michael Frante from Spearhead.
Right.
And and other projects. And so I was like, there's a lot of Frantes out there, but there's different spelling, totally unrelated.
I think this next song was a little bit of a debate between Rachel and I. Now that I don't like the song, I felt like the other stuff we're going for was much more poppy. I think Rachel really pushed for this one. I had already used a veto. That's how it works. I would classify as more grungy. You know, doll parts.
Yeah, controversial choice. Just Courtney Love is an interesting one. I feel like you could really kind of, and leaving the Nick Broomfield documentary out of it. Although, man, long before Nick Broomfield, you know, the Curtin Courtney, wasn't that?
Yeah,
Nick
yeah.
Broomfield,
I never watched
that doc.
Yeah, I don't know the name.
Long before that, I'm sure I've told you this story before. And I know I've bored the listeners with it in some version of this, whatever this is, whether it's radio or podcast. But long before there was a documentary made by a legitimate documentary filmmaker, there was a guy named Richard Lee, I believe was his name, in Seattle. He had a public access TV show, and he used to his whole show was about how Courtney Love was responsible for the death of Kurt Cobain, as in it had him killed. And every week he would just go around to some place where he thought he was about to break the story wide open. And he had a Hi-8 camera on a stick. This is before selfie sticks, but he had a tripod stick that he would just carry around, and he would rotate the camera between pointing at whatever security guard was telling him, you can't come in here, and then like 1 inch from his nostril. And he was extremely monotone. I almost want to see if I can Courtney Love. I'm seeing if I can find some old, like, if there was any kind of will you humor me, my friend? We're taking this to,
you're humoring me.
We are taking this to a, well, but see, that was enjoyable. You were playing music that's been widely acclaimed, and now I'm playing you Kurt Cobain was mutilated, Richard Lee, Seattle Public Access TV, April 13, 2003. He's outside of Blight's funeral home, which presumably was maybe where... I don't know. Let's just see Richard. He's got the camera. It's turned around. It's an inch from his face. Let's just see what he had to say.
As some of you may know or recall, we covered a variety of political subjects. I think numbers 30, 31, and 32 were Perot at the Paramount, which was Ross Perot in his last stand as a viable presidential.
By the way, for the record, he really kind of just Not unlike us, he went wherever he wanted to go while he was investigating the murder of Kurt Cobain. Let's jump ahead in the tape here.
These endeavors will be anthologized in a book to be published by the Harvard Press. Although I would much rather read a slim volume rather than a fat volume of this nonsense. I'd rather read a slim volume done in earnest about, who killed Jeff Buckley.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he got into Jeff Buckley, too. So he would just stand around with his camera and just talk for hours and also often get kicked out of places because he was trying to investigate this murder. And then he ran for mayor. And because KUOW is KUOW and there's all these equal time rules, I remember we had to have him on as a mayoral candidate. This is when I was like an intern at the station. And I remember him sitting in there with his camera, and his mayoral platform was basically outing Courtney Love for the murder of Kurt Cobain.
Wow, that's a hell of a platform. And yeah, transportation.
And monorail.
He was pro-monorail. That's what I was going to say.
It's pretty much the monorail and Courtney Love killed Kurt Cobain. I mean, to just get back to the topic at hand, I can't quite tell if Courtney Love was just a total hanger-on who just, and if Hole and its success was just because she hired competent, fellow musicians and they got some catchy songs out and she was a novelty, or if she was legit part of that movement. I can't make up my mind on her, and maybe it's not my job to make up my mind on her, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Hole fan, and I think that, being a huge Nirvana fan at the time, and then, I don't know, she doesn't have the best reputation for a bunch of different reasons. I think I was not into Hole. Listening to Doll Parts right now, that's a legit good song. I don't think it fits on this mixtape because of it tonally, but I think it's a legit good song. And I think that she and her band, Hole and everything were around, I think long before she and Kurt Cobain got together, right? So
If I was going to go for a Hole song, I would go for Malibu. Do you know that one?
No. You know the deep cut.
Let me play it for a little bit.
Tonally, that fits this mixtape.
Isn't this
better,
way more the vibe you're going for? Is it too late to kick Rachel off the project and make me your longest running co-bro of this mixtape?
I think Rachel does. What were we talking about? She doesn't want to make another mix, but maybe it's. All right. I don't know what it is. Anyway,
this new one.
We're getting real close here now. The OCD has taken over. I can't not finish this with just like a few more songs. So we'll go.
Wait, just listen to the chorus though.
All right,
it's good. By the way, I'm a sucker for any song that name checks a place in California or the state of California. And I'm not even saying that jokingly. I'm thinking about so many songs that I probably wouldn't. Like, I probably like that song because they're singing about Malibu.
Speaking of Malibu, which is an album by Anderson .Paak. Anderson .Paak is coming to Seattle, by the way.
Please tell me he's coming to Jazz Alley. And then all of our dreams come true.
I am definitely going to go see him unless there's some, actual, unless I'm out of town or something. I'm very, very excited about that.
Pre-funk at Teddy's? The Anderson .Paak show?
I learned something on this show when you were out that pre-funk isn't the roots of that are not from like funk music, but from pre-function, something at Seattle. They used to call get-togethers functions at Seattle University, which was a dry campus. You knew all that. You're from around here.
I thought it was from prefunctal cortex, which is the part of your brain that wants to start having fun even when the party hasn't started, so you got pre-funk.
Right, yeah. Do you know...
Let's finish out this mixtape.
I'm feeling like this probably... I have a feeling that I might have tried to strike this one, too.
You gotta get more vetoes, bruh.
Yeah, you should see the other songs.
No one hurt my fragile little mind right now. It's tangled up
Yeah, this was a mistake.
Don't you know?
Nobody buys me. Nobody buys me.
Is this a small child singing? What's going on? But I'll
bloom. Do you remember where this kicks in?
I don't even know this song, or maybe I'll know it when the chorus goes. On my guitar, you
fuck. Sorry with the language there.
We're going to play along Tim and Eric style.
Oh, you paralyze my mind, and for that, you suck.
Is this ugly kid Jane?
Yeah, it does. You're right. I see a connection there. I'm not a big fan of that song. It's called
"Who
Is
That?"
Suck by the Murmurs.
I do think I liked a few Murmurs songs in the day. They might have been on a soundtrack or something. But like, I've never been the kind of person who really likes that. I'm sure there's an exception to this rule that I'm creating on the fly. But like, for instance, "Ugly Kid Joe," "Hate Everything About You."
Yeah.
Or "You Suck," or maybe the closest I came to it was I did have a soft spot for that CeeLo "FU" song just because it was so damn catchy.
But boy, that did not wear well, did it? Like, that song was so popular for a while, and I liked it when it came on. And I don't know if it was because it was so omnipresent or just something about the tone of that song, but I actively dislike it now.
Well, it doesn't help that CeeLo Green has, there's been some stuff circulating around for years about him not being a particularly savory character. That probably doesn't help things.
That.
It's a catchy song. What's amazing is that like that song was also apparently able to be successful as "Forget You."
Right.
You know, like so as to get radio play, because I feel like, you know, the real F word, F you with the real F word is just that's clean. That's neat. That's how we think about it. "Forget You" is, it's dorky. It doesn't, the scansion is off. Everything's wrong about it. I think if I were CeeLo Green or even the label, well, no, the label just wants to make money. If I were CeeLo Green, I'd be like, look, it's just not going to be on the radio. If it's got to be "Forget You," either bleep it or like just make people buy the CD or listen to it through some source where they can hear it in its beautiful, sweary glory. But no, he knew that "Forget You" would be fine too. And it was, and that's why he's rich.
What about Frank? What about replacing it with Frank? "Frank You."
What about Doggam Father Mucker?
What about that? There is one band that appeared on this mixtape twice.
Oh.
It's not Four Non Blondes.
We've already heard this band's name.
Yeah.
Field again.
It is. Congratulations to you.
Yay.
It's called "My Sister." And then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I mention that I skipped over "Stay" by Lisa Loeb? I just want, in case people are keeping track at home and wondering how the hell we ended up on
this.
Thank
our donors of the "Stay."
Right.
Ignatius, Amanda, Douglas, and Rebecca.
So we skip that one. And here it is. We're closing out the album with a new performer, one who hasn't popped up yet.
Oh. Oh yeah.
Jenny came over and told me about Fred. He's such a hairy behemoth, she said. Dumb as a box of hammers, but he's such a handsome guy. And I opened up and I told her about Larry. And yesterday how he asked me to marry. And I'm not giving him an answer yet. I think I can do better.
You know, I'm looking at this list.
Is this some like Jill Sobule or something?
It is exactly what it is. Jill Sobule, "I Kissed a Girl."
Wow.
I also skipped over.
How did I remember that? And what has it been pushing out of my brain that I should have been remembering?
We skipped Fiona Apple too, "Criminal." And the reason I'm bringing that up is I think that I probably put together the final arrangement of these songs. And I think everything after "Stay," which is obviously probably what inspired this whole project, everything after "Stay," I think, is more leaning Rachel. Hole, Fiona Apple, "The Murmurs, You Suck," "My Sister," I'm down with that, and Jill Sobule, "I Kissed a Girl." I'm fine. I clearly, I'm fine with them being on this mixtape, but those are not the ones that speak to me so much as much as the ones that we started with.
I'm knowing our friend Rachel, I'm imagining, because I think she went to like Chico State. Just imagining her kind of hippie-ish Chico State undergrad, late 90s, just, you know, grooving out to some of those powerful women. I'm sure there was some Ani DeFranco being listened to as well.
She was actually...
That didn't make its way onto the tape.
Do you know that she was a big... apparently the people that she hung out with were more like metalheads. She's...
I would never guessed that in a million years.
Yeah, she has some... yeah, I'll let next time she's on the show, we can talk to her about it.
Do you guys have like a metal mixtape that we can play now?
That is something that I'm working on with Nick Jarin, who was, or as we call him now, AstroTurf, who was, of course, a heavy metal
drummer. I told
him
that on Saturday night, by the way. He's into it, he said.
Oh, good. Oh, by the way.
He's into it in the way that AstroTurf is into everything. He's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I'll take that.
And
that's my Nick Jarin impression, by the way.
Christina, who edits our newsletter and does video editing and all
Kalo?
This stuff. Kalo, she had a little thing that she added to the newsletter this week. I said, hey, because she emailed me something. I said, that's great. That's a real value add content there, Kalo. I said, do you mind just kind of adding that under your kind of byline in the newsletter? Could you just kind of say a note from Christina? And then I said, actually, Luke's been calling you Kalo. So first of all, sorry about that. But secondly, could you just call yourself Kalo in the newsletter? And she said, would you mind if I just stuck with Christina?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Classic Kalo.
Like, I felt legitimately bad, kind of like, yeah, we got this name for you. Like, pretty exciting, right? And she's like, I mean, obviously Kalo is the best. But like, I just felt like, how annoying is it when... old men, and I think compared to her, we're pretty old men, like kind of try to give young women nicknames. Like, I've just seen
that a thing?
I think so. Maybe I'm just basing this on my own like observations, and it's more specific to my thing. But I feel like there's a like kind of like grandparents, and I don't know, there's a kind of or like. I'm trying to think of a way of talking about this without outing somebody, but I do think that there's this kind of like older guy kind of giving a younger girl kind of a nickname in like maybe like in casual conversation, maybe somebody you work with at the office or even maybe somebody who's serving you at a diner or something like that. And I think it's like the guy's way of trying to bro down or be cutesy or something. Maybe this is not a trend.
Let me ask you this. Is it a nickname or is it more just like calling someone like, you know, loves or like baby or like honey, like something that's just kind of weirdly overly personal? Because that I've definitely seen that go on. In fact, I know a person who that's his move. This is actually a person who's sort of a friend of me and Carrie's. I guess, yeah, a friend of me and Carrie's, I guess you would say.
That's my wife.
But like his thing is to call people loves for females. And it always makes me feel really uncomfortable. Is it that or is it specific nicknames? Because if anything, I feel like that nicknaming thing, again, it sounds like you've observed it in the wild, but I think it'd be more typically like some old salty dude to some younger, less salty dude who he's kind of trying to like, you know, I don't know. Again, I'm in both cases, I'm just kind of speculating because older people nicknaming younger people is not a phenomenon I've really observed a ton.
Or like shortening a name. I am thinking more nicknames, more like the George W. Bush style of just like, you know, giving everybody kind of a nickname.
Like of a job brownie.
But I will say that I could be completely wrong about this.
Kalo Brownie.
Yeah. I could be completely wrong about this. I wouldn't mind maybe if any women out there think that there's any truth to this or it's something that you have noticed in your actual life, you know how to email me because I'd be interested in knowing. But I could be completely wrong. I could be thinking about one or two people specifically in my life who kind of had a penchant for doing this. Penchant's the wrong word there. Who had a...
Penchant
means you're kind of good at something, right? Penchant.
I always thought penchant means you're kind of into a thing. You have a tendency to do something.
Oh, yeah. A strong or habitual liking for something or tendency to do something. So I would say I actually nailed that, but I didn't nail the unmute your tab.
Penchant.
I call the woman who does that voice,
you know,
I call her Penny.
You know how I remember why I know that kind of definition pretty clearly in my mind is from... not a what we think of as an important kind of literary or grammatical kind of source in our world, but rather from the movie Austin Powers, when Dr. Evil is describing his father when he's in group therapy mm-hmm. with his kid. And he says that his father was a low-grade narcolept with a penchant for buggery. My father was a low-grade narcolept with a penchant for buggery. And it just has always stuck in my mind. So that's where I'm getting my definition from. Fly.
I have that tape here, but it's over a minute long. Penchant. So I'll just play
Let's
penchant
do it.
Again.
Please.
You
no,
want to?
No, play
okay.
it, please. Come
All right.
on. We spent 35 minutes playing you know, music from the 90s. And by the way, loving every minute of it. But let's do this.
Now, you tell us a little about yourself.
That's not Jane Lynch, is it? I don't think it is.
You know what? It's funny because it sounds like her, and I don't remember it being her, but at the time I watched it, I didn't know what a Jane Lynch was. So it very well could have been Jane Lynch.
Because I'm not watching this. I'm just playing. I think I'd remember if it was her.
Now, you tell us a little about yourself.
The details of my life are quite inconsequential.
Oh, no, please, please. Let's hear about your childhood.
Yeah, okay. Come on, come on, please.
Very well. Where do I begin? My father was a relentlessly self-improving boulangerie owner from Belgium with low-grade narcolepsy and a penchant for buggery. My mother was a 15-year-old French prostitute named Chloe with webbed feet. My father would womanize, he would drink, he would make outrageous claims like he invented the question mark.
And
sometimes he would accuse chestnuts of being lazy. The sort of general malaise that only the genius possess and the insane lament. My childhood was typical. Summers in Rangoon, luge lessons. In the spring, we'd make meat helmets. When I was insolent, I was placed in a burlap bag and beaten with reeds. Pretty standard, really.
I don't know if I probably saw the first one of that movie. Oh, maybe I saw the second one. Is that the one with Beyonce? The second one?
Maybe, or that might be the... Was there a third one?
I think there was a third. Anyway, I think I saw the Beyonce one, but I never... Because this was such a huge cultural phenomenon, and it was another one of those cultural phenomenons that kind of... I just didn't have much interest in it.
Well, let me just throw this out real quick.
TVTL breaking news.
It's Carrie Fisher.
Oh,
as the therapist.
That... Now I don't have the tape in front of me anymore, but yeah, now I hear it.
Mm-hmm. I know we've got a lot of Carrie Fisher fans in the audience, and many people were probably yelling at their phones that it's Carrie Fisher, and we figured it out. Yeah, you know, that movie, that whole series of movies, of the Austin Powers movies, one was Addie was about the age where we were both really cracked up by that stuff, and so we were both very, like, into a lot of the Dr. Evil stuff. But I could also see not liking that movie if I had watched it and I was in the wrong mood, because not unlike The Simpsons, and I've probably made this comparison before, like it's ostensibly the humor of the movie, or at least a lot of the movie, is supposed to turn on the hilarity of Austin Powers. And there's almost nothing in the world I think is less funny than Austin Powers. It is the worst. And then you have Dr. Evil, who is so funny to me. And even just these other little kind of subtle things, like Will Ferrell plays this character, and the running bit is he's at the sort of high council of, like, evil people. And then he's usually killed at some point in the movie, but he doesn't die. Like, Dr. Evil will activate this kind of button that will then, like, cause Will Ferrell's character to fall through the floor into what is supposed to be kind of his instant death. But he's always just down there going, like, I'm not dead. My legs hurt very badly, though. It smells like almond. Like,
I can hear that voice, man. That's not,
it's just Will Ferrell, like, improvising. And just the... Anyway, so little kind of moments like that. Also, not funny, Mini-Me. This, which, although I will say this. The Mini-Me thing is, at its core, a kind of... It's a sly reference to... When Marlon Brando officially lost his marbles on the filming of the Island of Dr. Moreau movie, I think there's actually a documentary about this. Basically, there was a guy who was an actor who was really sort of having his moment, kind of a younger guy who was actually in the Island of Dr. Moreau and was supposed to be, I think, essentially the like second lead in that movie. Marlon Brando is Dr. Moreau. He's this, you know, kind of nutcase mad scientist on this island. Val Kilmer comes out to check it out. And he's got this guy who's supposed to be, I guess, his trusted sidekick. Well, the story goes that when Marlon Brando showed up on the set of the movie, he just became obsessed with this guy who was for a while the shortest adult person on planet Earth, or at least he had the Guinness record for it. I think he was from like Venezuela or something. And Marlon Brando became obsessed with this guy who was supposed to be there just kind of as part of the like oddity of the island. Like he's got tiny adults, you know, and stuff like that. Marlon Brando started dressing this person in the same outfits that he was wearing. He made costume make outfits for the guy. And he would like there was a scene apparently where Marlon Brando is playing a grand piano as Dr. Moreau, and his sidekick who he's obsessed with is playing a tiny grand piano on top of Marlon Brando's piano. And so that's where the like mini me thing comes from. And as a reference, it's pretty funny, but then in practice, it's just stupid because it has to do with penis size and scatology and stupid stuff like that. So anyway, that's a long-winded, extremely boring description of my relationship with the Austin Powers movies. Great moments, some really funny stuff, but then a lot of stuff that just I thought was really dopey. By the way, also describing an episode of TBTL.
At its best.
Pretty standard. Pretty standard stuff. Hey, time for top stories. Why not?
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
There should be a name for when the top stories start after the 1 hour mark.
Yes.
What do we call that?
Kalo. We Kaloed it.
I want to get this top story in today, and we do not have to spend a bunch of time on it. We can be very efficient with it. But I feel like today being the day that the news broke that Dr. Stephen Hawking has passed away, I feel for some reason unusually compelled to want to honor him on this day because this is when the news is most recent on this front. I can't say that I'm somebody who understood anything about the physics that Stephen Hawking wrote about. I have a brief history of time, which, by the way, can I just say this? Not until today did I literally get what a funny title of a book that is.
Because brief?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it...
Yeah, like, because time, if there's anything not brief, it's the history of time.
Sure.
I mean, it's such a sly little thing. I have had an old weathered copy of A Brief History of Time through... You're talking about moving at the beginning of the show? Like, I don't know, since I was 20-something years old. Every move I've ever gone on from place to place, that book has come with me. Have I read it? Hell no. Do I want to read it? Hell yeah.
Or do you want to be the,
but I also,
do you want to read it or do you want to be the person who says you've read it? There's a difference. I think if you want to read it, you'd have read it. I think you want to, you want to have had read it.
You know what? In 99% of the cases in my life, I would say I want to be a person who would tell people I've read it. That's very Luke Burbank. Also talking about myself in the third person, also very Luke Burbank.
Very on brand.
But I think that I want to – I actually think I want to kind of know what's in there. And I've heard of the book described as a very accessible description of black holes and of his – you know, this theory that he wrote or posited about black holes and the fact that black holes are not just like – and again, I apologize to people who actually understand like astrophysics. This is me paraphrasing from reading some obits today. But you know, this idea that he wrote this kind of paper on black holes and the fact that black holes were not just purely destructive, that they were maybe creating things or at the very least leaking things out, which was thought to not be really possible. And to hear how revolutionary this was as an idea and to hear people talk about, you know, people who really understand this stuff, to talk about how much this was just unheard of. And the guy who was his advisor said it's the most beautiful thing ever written about physics. And we're talking about a guy who's got like he's competing with Albert Einstein, among others. So that's really high praise. So anyway, to answer your question, Andrew, I think I want to know what's in there. And I think that I feel like at some point I will get around to trying to read it more than wanting to say, because I'm not saying that I've read his original paper or that I read, you know, these kind. My grandmother, rest her soul as well, She was a physics major at UCLA, I believe, which is at, or maybe it was in Nebraska. Yeah, my dad's mom, Walt Burbank, famously of the Teddy's sign, his mom was a physics major in like the 50s, which was really unheard of. And it was interesting because when she had moved into like assisted living, one of the things she wanted, I don't know if it was my dad or my uncle or somebody to bring her, was her old physics books. Because she was just like, I want to keep up on these things. And I don't know how far she got back into them, but I know that she had like legit physics textbooks from like college level physics that she was reading, which always I always thought was kind of a cool element about her.
It is.
But anyway, so I'm not trying to say I could read a physics textbook. I'm just saying I do, or I wouldn't want to tell people I'd read a physics textbook. I find that book hopeful for me, hopeful that I will someday actually spend the time to read it. Okay, so that's one thing. The other thing is just, I know it's very trite, but like, holy shit, to think that this guy made it to 76, considering what he was facing, and obviously some of that is just the bizarre luck of life, that he would have the only version of ALS I've ever heard of where you actually don't just eventually die from it in short order. The fact that he would be able to stay alive, it's certainly not a case of him being more him desiring to stay alive longer than other people who have passed away from ALS. It's just random luck, I guess. But the fact that he was able to and continued to just do all the stuff that he did despite this, like that, there's this picture that I put on Twitter today of him in fucking space, man. Like, and it's from like, I want to say like not even 10 years ago. I mean, I would have packed it up. I would have really packed it up, or I would have just said like, okay, you know, my body is just not going to work, and I'm just going to try to be as happy and as relaxed and as unencumbered as I can for the amount of time I have left on this planet. And I know this is not medically verified and this is a little hokey to say, but there's maybe got to be some connection between his continual engagement in life and the fact that his life went on so much longer than it should have on paper.
Can I ask you a question? I'm not trying to sharpshoot because I actually know kind of embarrassingly little about Stephen Hawking. I know of him as a great mind, as a scientist, and as a pop culture kind of icon, sort of. You played that Simpsons tape at the beginning. But he was never in space. Did I misunderstand you, or am I really
no,
that
did
dumb?
No, did I say space? Sorry, I meant in zero gravity. He was up in like vomit comets. Yeah, if said space, that was a... That was incorrect. Yeah.
Well,
he was
Luke, we're all in space, so you weren't wrong, my friend.
But yeah, no, just the fact that they figured out how to get him into an airplane and get it up high enough and then, you know, bomb it down towards the Earth's surface, so he was at zero gravity. Cool. That's for anybody, that would be kind of a crazy thing, and for him and his condition. I mean, also, let's throw in the fact that Homeboy was divorced. Like, and the word was he was actually cheating for a period of time. What are the mechanics on that? And like, I mean, he seemed to be living his life as Moss as anyone could live their life, and completely not letting the fact that he could at the end only move the smallest parts of his body, like I think his cheek and maybe a finger, and the finger may have even gone away. I think it was maybe just his cheek towards the end. It's pretty inspirational and pretty amazing. And as I was reading about his life today, I was thinking to myself, man, next time I'm feeling annoyed or overwhelmed because I have 3 conference calls in the same day, I'm going to just remember him in zero gravity and be like, yeah, I think this is doable. I think this is achievable. And I know that probably sounds like the back of a, you know, like a motivational poster somebody might put up in a cubicle. But it seriously is inspiring to me that the shit that this guy did, it's pretty incredible.
I misunderstood. I thought you were going to say the next time you have 3 conference calls, you're just going to try to get into some sort of zero gravity situation. So you don't
gone
have to
fishing.
Calls.
Exactly. Going to hang a sign and then I'm going to get in a vomit comet and
gone
I'm just gonna,
floating.
Ah, much better.
Nihar Patel tweeted today, by the way. I just want to.
Oh, yeah.
This was, I think, the greatest kind of honor. He said, Stephen Hawking will live on in the hearts of all of us who pretend to have read his book.
That's a pretty good spoof. The other thing that I always found interesting was when Stephen Hawking would show up on kind of pop culture things and projects and TV shows, in particular when he was on The Simpsons. Because if I understand right, and I could be wrong on this, they had him record his sort of lines, his dialogue, for an episode of The Simpsons. I don't know if you remember this one, but it's when everybody who's in Mensa decides that they're going to take over Springfield and run it because they're the smartest people in the town and therefore they know what's best for the town. What I think is interesting is that, like I said, the story goes that Stephen Hawking went into some kind of recording studio somewhere. I don't know if it was in the US or in the UK, but he went into a recording studio somewhere and recorded his lines for this, which is, I think it's a statement about the pursuit of normalcy if your life is deeply abnormal by conventional standards, because they could have just programmed the words into a computer that talks like Stephen Hawking. Like, it would have been way more efficient to just go like, okay, here's the line Stephen Hawking's going to say, and then maybe ask him, are you cool with this? And if he said yes, then you just like would, like, you don't actually need Stephen Hawking to go into a studio and record it. And I think they did, which I'm sure was because he was like, shit, man, I'm going to be on The Simpsons. I want to do this.
Yeah, of course.
I don't want to just email my lines in.
Because I don't think you would really be on The Simpsons. I mean, would you be, I mean, legally, who knows, or with the SAG-AFTRA stuff, who knows, but
this is a Schrodinger's voice type of situation.
But like, if you have somebody impersonate me on The Simpsons, you can't put me in the credits. I wasn't on The Simpsons.
Right, but your voice is not a standard computer program. Like that, Steve, towards the end, actually, you know what, I'm confusing him for a moment with Roger Ebert, which they embarked on an ambitious Roger Ebert project, I believe, where they had recorded, because he'd done so much. Do you remember this story?
No.
Because Roger Ebert had done so much television and probably radio work that there was a company that was building a voice for Roger Ebert that was Roger Ebert's voice.
Oh, no, I didn't know that, because he lost his entire jaw, right?
Yeah, he wasn't really able to speak towards the end, and the idea was they were going to build his voice from scratch so that he would have a voice that was actually Roger Ebert's voice. But activated kind of probably in a similar fashion. And so for Stephen Hawking, what I'm saying is that's not like a special it started out seeming like a special Stephen Hawking voice. But I mean, you can go on the Internet and make that voice right now. And I think, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I think he could have just phoned it in, so to speak. But I do believe he went somewhere and recorded it, which I don't know why that fascinates me. But it's just kind of an interesting like. I guess it just proves to me how engaged he was with life, even at times when it would have been more convenient to just be disengaged from life.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I see that story. I think I think we understand each other, but it's just interesting because I think I see it from the other. It's like we're looking in a mirror, only not. Because my perspective on that is kind of – it flips yours on its head. I would be just grossly disappointed if – you know, he was on, quote unquote, on The Simpsons and credited on The Simpsons. And then we found out, oh, he didn't go somewhere and record that like any of us humans would do, that they just mocked up with the computer program, the voice, and just said he was on it and got his permission. Like that would destroy me. That would really suck because he's a person.
Exactly. And that's why I'm saying I think that, and you talk to anybody who's battling something like he is or any kind of physical disability or challenge, and I think that often the number one thing they'll say is, I just want to be engaged in life in the way everybody else is engaged as much as possible, you know? And that would be an example of him living out that exact idea. Speaking of that episode of The Simpsons, can we just play this? You know, because we're just playing things on the show today. I've got the part of that episode when he shows up, when things are really falling apart for Springfield, and he basically comes in to tell the Mensa people that they've been doing a really lousy job. There's a couple parts of this that I was like, should I cut it out? But I'll just narrate for people what's going on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I must apologize. This man does not speak for the Council of Alphas. We hold you sub-omegaloids in the highest regard.
When are we going to get to my broccoli juice program?
Quit butting in, please. Your IQ is a mere 155, while mine is a muscular 170. I am smart, much smarter than you. Hibbert!
You should all do what I say. My IQ is 199 for crying out loud. 198, 197.
Big deal. My IQ is 280.
Stephen Hawking!
The world's smartest man.
What are you doing here?
I wanted to see your utopia. But now I see it as more of a fruit-topia.
I'm sure what Dr. Hawking means is...
Silence. I don't need anyone to talk for me, except this voice box. You have clearly been corrupted by...
Such a great joke, by the way. You always wonder, like, if they were nervous writing that for him. But then you feel like this dude would... if anybody would get why that joke is so beautiful, it'd be this dude.
My power. For shame.
Larry Flint is right. You got
it. I forgot about that joke. That is one of the best Simpsons jokes.
Oh, so good.
I don't know which is a bigger disappointment. My failure to formulate a unified field theory, or you.
I don't like your tone.
If you are looking for trouble, you found it.
Yeah, just try me, you.
Oh!
A boxing glove comes out of Stephen Hawking's chair.
Come on, you idiot! We're taking back this town!
Yeah, let's make litter out of these litterati!
That's too clever. You're one of them!
A massive fight ensues. The gazebo that they're in the park starts to collapse because of the crush of people. Hawking activates his helicopter, flies he and Lisa away from the danger, and they land nearby.
Lisa, thank God you're okay.
Did you have fun with your robot buddy?
Oh, Dr. Hawking, we had such a beautiful dream. What went wrong?
Don't feel bad, Lisa. Sometimes the smartest of us can be the most childish.
Even you?
No, not me. Never.
I guess everyone has a different vision for the perfect world.
Wow, Mom, that's very profound.
Hey, you read that off my screen.
Who's up for some beers?
I am.
That's the smartest thing I've heard all day.
Cut to Moe's.
Your theory of a donut-shaped universe is intriguing, Homer. I may have to steal it.
Wow, I can't believe someone I never heard of is hanging out with a guy like me.
All right, it's closing time. Who's paying the tab?
I am.
I didn't say that.
Yes, I did. Dope.
So there you go. Stephen Hawking, 76 years old, rest in peace. My goodness gracious, quite a life, quite a life. All right, let us, I think because we're almost an hour and a half into this, just call that good for today's show, if you're okay with that, Andrew.
Yep.
Did you have thoughts on a show title and or a song to go out with? I have a thought on the song in honor of Stephen Hawking, but... We've played it a lot on the show, so it might be overkill.
Let me say a couple of things. First of all, as far as music is concerned, okay. I just played an entire frickin' mixtape that I made with Rachel. I think people have heard enough of my musical picks, so I think you should go with your gut on that. The only title that I came up with was, or not that I came up with, that I wrote down, that you came up with, was How Many Cocaines Did You Take? Which I think is funny. Did you write down anything?
I didn't because of all the cocaines I took.
Yeah, let's do that then. How many cocaines did you take?
Okay. And then, let's see here. The song that I was thinking of is, I heard about this so long ago. I'm talking like, speaking of the, conspiracy theorist / mayoral candidate who once came into KUOW back when it was in the communications building at the University of Washington. At around that same time, my friend and yours, Bill Radke, happened upon this thing called MC Hawking, which is basically, this is so old. I mean, this is years and years old. Somebody figured out, because you can get access to Stephen Hawking's voice, or at least the voice that sounds similar to the one that he was using, you could just write any song you wanted. And so somebody wrote a bunch of songs in the persona of kind of like a rap Stephen Hawking. And so there's a few of them. There's one that's called Entropy. What's kind of great about these songs, what I feel like is now, years later, a little obvious about these songs is the idea of the unlikely pairing of something smart and something hip-hoppy has been done. But this was one of the original ones I ever heard. And also what's kind of cool is the songs legit explain the theories they're talking about, including Entropy, including E equals MC,
which is actually
Bleep, the creationist.
E equals MC Hawking, I think, right? Which is a great name.
or F the creationists, or the mighty Stephen Hawking? What would you like to hear?
I think we should go with E equals MC Hawking.
Okay. So that's what we're going to go out with today.
Am I playing it here? MC Hawking. Or are you playing it there?
Yeah. You got it there.
Yeah,
you have access?
Yep. I think I can play it here.
All right. Let's go out with that and tell everybody thank you for listening. We will be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Damn, this is Moon. Yo, a lot of people been asking what the Hawkman's all about. This one's for you. E stands for energy. Yo, that's me. I'm a brilliant scientist and a dope MC. Before you step to me, I'd think twice, G. Cause I'm the lord of chaos, king of entropy. You down with it? I'm a mega for hope, so cause if you're not, I got a mega for the rope. Yo, I'll string you up from a big ass tree with a sign round your neck that says whack MC. There ain't another mega for the hard like me. I'm a universal constant, I'm a singularity. So listen up, shit, cause there may be a test. My style is smooth, but it's hard to digest. My science is tight, rhymes faster than light. Like a ton of TNT, I'm about to ignite. E equals MC.
Come on, come on.
E equals MC.
What?
E equals MC.
Come on, come on.
E equals MC.
What?
E equals MC.
Come on, come on.
E equals MC.
What?
Power out.